Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast. Sarah and Emily here with you again. Thanks for joining us. Today we have Allison May as our guest. She is the Maryland Client Service Manager, and she's been with us for 5 years, I think she said. And today we talk about all things Transova, client service, and a little bit of Herefords in there.
Yeah, a lot of those topics you just mentioned, we kind of covered the same thing, which was logistics and how many moving pieces there are, whether it's within the Hereford Association or client service or Transova as a whole. Allison really gives some good insight into, you know, how many moving parts there really are to make it all work.
Yeah, Allison brings a great industry perspective that I don't think we've heard yet on the podcast. So very excited to share with you all her interview.
Yep. And Allison, she is a go-getter, and you can hear that in her answers. Like, she's not afraid of a challenge, and she's not afraid to put the work in to get what needs to happen to get it done. And so that's what we really appreciate that about Allison. And I think you can hear that in a lot of her answers and our conversation.
Definitely. Allison is a huge asset to the Transova team, and we're happy that we get to work with her on a regular basis. So without further ado, here's Allison May. Well, welcome, Allison, to the Powered by Transova podcast. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Why don't you start off and tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at Transova?
Sure. So my name is Allison May. I work out of our Maryland center here in Boonesboro. Been with the company about 5 years. It'll be 5 years in May. My title is client service manager, but I'm not even sure some days really what that means. It kind of takes on a lot of different roles. I work directly with our team here, our client service team, and we kind of keep all the pieces moving together. There's a lot of logistics and moving things that go into making this all work for our clients. So that's kind of our main responsibility. And then I do get the ability to work directly with clients as well. So I kind of work with predominantly beef clients, some dairy clients as well, kind of out here on the East Coast, the Southeast. And I've been fortunate to work with some folks in Montana and Iowa and South Dakota and a little bit all over the place. So we're kind of the go-between in our system between the clients and the labs and the vets and the embryologists and all that sort of thing. So it looks different every day. I always tell people there's nothing like this job for sure.
Allison, you described a lot of different kind of responsibilities that you have, and there's a lot of logistics, I would say, that goes into kind of coordinating everything. Can you tell us a little bit more about what sites you work with directly within Transova, and maybe what kind of services they each offer? Kind of describe some of that.
Sure. Yeah, it definitely takes, it looks like a lot of different things, I guess, what we do. So most of our satellite locations that we work with are typically at either a repro facility or a farm or something like that. And so basically what we do in client service, we would work directly with the clients and we would get you guys set up, talk about your donors and the bulls and get you set up on a stimulation protocol if we go that route. And then basically our team, so our vet and our embryologist, would go to those sites every other week typically. And we would line everybody up to kind of be there that day. We'd perform either the flushes, the transfers, or the IVF collections, and then bring all that work back to one of our regional labs. So obviously I work out of Maryland, so ours is here in Boonesboro. So kind of a couple of the sites that I work with directly, some of the bigger ones especially are Spears down in Kentucky. They're in Franklin. Southern Cattle Company, they're in Florida. Churchill is out in Montana. Legends Lane is in Ohio. We're kind of a smattering. We've made an attempt to organize ourselves regionally, but naturally we kind of gravitate towards certain areas or certain clients or certain cows. So I would say the bulk of our centers, or the ones that I work with specifically, we're on kind of a 2-week rotation of our teams being there to perform whatever reproductive services. Some of them do offer board as well. I know Jamie Spears in Kentucky, he does. And at those types of facilities, you can typically get other services. I also work with a lot of clients that house with us here in Maryland. So that's always kind of nice because you get to see the donors every day, and we do have a lot of flexibility then if you house at a regional center to do additional services and things like that. So, but yeah, getting long-winded, but most of our satellites are on that 2-week rotation, and some of them offer housing as well.
Allison, you said that the client service team gravitates towards certain breeds. I think we know what breed you gravitate towards.
Yeah, it's possible that I have a really soft spot for Herefords. I sure do. And it's funny because now that's such a nice thing. But when I went to school, so I'm originally from New Jersey and I grew up with Herefords. That's what my grandpa had when he actually got out of the dairy business. They got Herefords. They got Angus cows first, fun fact, but they broke all of the fences down and were out in the neighborhood overnight day one. So then we got Herefords. So, and when I went to Penn State for school, I was obviously in the NSI program and all that. And I was the lone Hereford breeder at Penn State. I was very, very heavy Angus and some Shorthorn and Lemmy people. So, yes, I have learned to defend my breed over the years, but love them, love the breed for sure. And this job is so unique because you get to meet so many different folks. So I've met some awesome people in every facet of both the beef and dairy industry, but for sure the red and whites will have a special spot in my heart.
Which has led to you joining the association volunteering, correct?
Yes. So I am a little bit of a sucker for these types of things, I'll be honest. And so back in, what month was Kansas City? October, something like that. went to the meeting, the annual meeting there in Kansas City, which was awesome. It was like a college reunion of sorts, but getting to see everybody from all over was great. We're all wearing a little thin of this COVID stuff for sure. So anyway, so got out there and friend of mine, Aaron Lockhart from Texas, had approached me a couple months back about volunteering for the board for the National Hereford Women. So, and I have been a member for a few years and have kind of watched from the sidelines, and I just really admire, you know, the additional work and time that these ladies put into awesome scholarships and opportunities for juniors in this breed. I was not in a very heavily supported area, I guess. Our local sports system was awesome growing up, but didn't have a lot of those opportunities to get involved on a national level until later. So I do try to take every opportunity I can to help. And so Aaron had reached out, mentioned it, and I submitted my application And then was accepted and voted onto the board of directors for the National Hereford Women back in Kansas City. So as part of that, it's a 4-year term. And so I'm going to help a lot to be a liaison between us and the HIFA board and team there, and also work on the fundraising committee. Just designed a custom wild rag with Herefords and flowers on it. I'm really excited about that. So looking forward to it for sure. I think it's going to be an awesome opportunity to help give back and raise a lot of money for the kids. So don't be surprised if you see me all over social media asking for money.
Now, from a previous life, I had been involved with the Hereford Association. And so I know that there are so many, like we've talked about the logistics of Transova, but Hereford is very similar in other breeds as well. But there's so many moving parts and people working tirelessly mm-hmm. behind the scenes to do all of that. And so there's so many of you that put your blood, sweat, and tears into those programs. And I don't know if people realize, you know, how much work goes into what you see at, you know, like the American Hereford Association. Tell me a little bit, Allison, about how have the shows been the last 6 months, you know, in the midst of COVID and everything? How, you know, how's the representation been?
Yeah, I am forever impressed, honestly, and humbled by the people in this industry. It's crazy to me what we are able to accomplish, because there have obviously been so many shows and events and things canceled or manipulated because of COVID regulations and things like that. So it's been interesting. None of it has been normal or what we're probably used to, but I mean, like you said, there's so many people that are just so dedicated to making it happen. You know, obviously I have the most experience with the Hereford breed, HIFA and the Hereford Association and the Junior Association, and the National Hereford Woman. There are so many people that have come together a lot of times very last minute because we're not sure what the regulations are going to do or be. And I think they've done an awesome job. I mean, across the board, Kansas City was a great event. To kind of start with, I did not go to Louisville. This was the first year I actually had COVID, fun fact. So I missed Louisville this year, first year in a long time. So Kansas City was awesome. And you could tell that people were pretty excited to be out. And then I was fortunate to go to Oklahoma City also for Cattlemen's Congress. And it just, you can still feel the excitement and the optimism. And I've thought that even through work, through dealing with clients and looking forward, you know, there's always so much planning and future work happening, not just right this second. So, yeah, it was awesome. I mean, people were so genuinely happy to be out and be doing what we love and just talking about things that we're passionate about and love, and it's almost like a little escape. It was kind of an escape from all the other stress and the things that are happening around us that we can't control. So it was awesome. And all the show committees and the breed associations just went above and beyond. It's incredible what we're able to do when we're in these situations and we have people that are so passionate. So it's been awesome.
Yep. There's been a lot of, I guess, not so great things about, you know, the pandemic and everything that's happened, but we've said on this, even this podcast before, like, it's been impressive how people have come together, and there's a lot of work that goes into those planning those activities. And a lot of people have done it on the fly because there's so much uncertainty. And so there's still been good things that have come out of it. And I liked your comment about kind of getting away, because it felt normal. Like when you go to a show, you feel like life has gone back to normal a little bit. And so I'm thankful for the people who have put on those events to kind of bring us back to what feels normal anyway.
Yeah. It was like you were in the OKC bubble or something, you know, while you were there. It was just at the grounds. It just, everybody, I think, was just happy to be out around people. I know I was. I didn't know what to do with myself the first day. As working from home, I, you know, go out in public and I'm like, what, who are these people? You know, so it was nice getting back out. And I think you're right, Allison, you know, it kind of has jump-started the year in looking ahead. Cause I feel that for Sarah and I, you know, we're first show that we've been to, big show in a year almost. And now it's like, okay, what's next? Let's get this momentum going. So it's exciting to actually plan to go other places, you know, here soon. So with that being said, Allison, what are you most excited about coming up in the next 6 to 8 months?
Oh my gosh. There's so many things. One, I'm very excited that my daughter, Lena, who's 8 years old, going on 35, she is going back to school, which is awesome. We have been locked down here in Maryland, obviously, and she's been fully virtual, which is a blessing and a curse. And these kids need school. So really excited for that to happen. This time of year is often the most stressful, but often the most exciting as well. So I love this time of year with my clients and my friends and my own cattle to just see. This is when we see the fruits of our labor for a lot of us from the last year, 18 months, whatever, you know, however long we've been working towards this calf crop that's coming out now. You know, we have a lot of seasonal clients as well that are going to come back in the next few months now that donors have calved out and are ready to start working again and that sort of thing. So it's an exciting time of year, I think, spring, coming into spring and then into summer a little bit. Like you said, hopefully there are many more opportunities to get out and see people and interact in person instead of on a phone or a computer. We love those opportunities and we haven't gotten very many of them. So I'm definitely excited to find some degree of normalcy, whatever that's going to look like. And, you know, sharing this season with clients and kind of see the fruits of our labor and work on planning for the next crop. So
the wheels are always moving. It seems like, you know, people are calving right now, which is exciting because you get to see the TOG babies, you know, and then, but then you're already thinking about what's next. You know, there's no downtime, I guess. And so I guess we're approaching a busier time at Transova, but it's exciting because you do get to talk to a lot of clients and hear how they're doing and, you know, look forward to the future. Tell me a little bit more about Allison May and what makes you tick and like what excites you? Like, what does success look like in your role? Like, what, you know, what brings you to work every day?
Are you actually sure that you want to be in my head right now? Because I don't know.
Without going into like this big therapy session, how about that?
Yes, I can skim the surface. That's an awesome question and it's a little bit hard, but I'll try to keep it above the border here. So the part about my job that I love and that keeps me coming in every day, it's hard to probably summarize into just one sentence and it's going to sound very vague, but honestly, getting to play even a very small role in the programs and in the lives of our clients and our coworkers. I mean, I work in a management role, so I'm able to kind of coach and guide and work with team members at every center. So that's awesome. But I think what's so unique about what we do is that through the services and the products that we offer, I mean, we really are able to have an impact. You know, whether it's a commercial client or a seed stock producer or a show, somebody breeding just specifically for the show ring, everything that we do, whether it's working on the donor side or finding semen or talking through scenarios and logistics and things like that, I mean, we really can have an impact. And sometimes that's really small and sometimes that's really big, depending on the program. But you know, just learning about these programs, making those connections, being able to connect other people. You know, I think that's one of my favorite parts. If you want to get in Allison's head, that's one of my favorite parts of this industry, just in general, is the people. You know, there are incredible people and they're so committed and so passionate about all different things. And, you know, I'm fortunate to have those connections and that opportunity countrywide, you know? And so just in conversation, talking with somebody from Florida, and he says, you know, I'd really like to look for this specific genetic line or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I know this guy in Montana. Like, let's connect you guys. So, I don't know, seeing some of that stuff happen and seeing other people connect and being able to have a role in that, I think is just so cool. And seeing it work is definitely awesome. It's probably on the flip side of your question, Sarah, the hardest part, and what we really all struggle with, me especially, is if it doesn't work or if something bad happens or if I know that a client or a friend is going through some stressful time, because it's just such a, I don't even know the right adjective. It's a biological process. It's finicky at best, really, because there's so many variables that go into it and what we're trying to do. So it really does suck the wind out of my sails and out of anybody's sails that, you know, if it doesn't work. But when it does, when those, you know, embryos turn into calves and turn into, you know, the next best one, whether that's a show animal or a production animal, it's such a good feeling.
Yeah. Emotions can really run high, you know, cause no matter what people's goals are, there's a lot of time, effort, thought, emotion tied into it. And so we hear that a lot from, I mean, not just client service, but, you know, people company-wide, that when it's good, we celebrate, but when it's bad, we feel that too. And so that's kind of what I think you're describing, is that you're happy to be part of it, but then you also, you know, you feel that personal tie when it doesn't work as the way you want it to.
And I think a lot of the part of that, you know, roughness or difficulty dealing with those, you know, poor results or bad things that happen or whatever, is just not always having a black and white answer. I mean, I don't know how many parts of our industry, period, really allow for that. I mean, even if you're bull breeding or selecting replacements or, you know, whatever you're doing, I think it's very hard in what we do to say for sure, if we do X plus Y, you're going to get Z and it's going to be great. Like, there's so many variables and genetics and, you know, environmental issues and things like that. So, it definitely is a challenge, and that's probably the hardest part, and the hardest conversations to have for sure. But, you know, that's where I think it's so important to connect with people and, you know, communicate through all that and hopefully work towards positives, because they're out there and I've seen it do amazing things for people. So,
Allison, you talked a lot about the communication of, you know, what happens after you make embryos and, you know, kind of the good and the bad that can happen. Looking ahead for producers, calves have hit the ground, it's time to rebreed, you know, or crap, I don't have enough embryos in the tank. You know, what do we got to do next? What does that conversation sound like that you have with the client on the phone, as far as tailoring our services to their program? What does that conversation sound like?
Yep. So that, it's actually one of my favorite things to do, honestly, just the planning part. Because if you just start heading in one direction and not really knowing where you're going, then you're going to have a hard time being successful. So, and I think one of the things to really keep in mind is that what we're doing today, you're not going to see the fruits of that labor for months or a year or a year and a half or whatever, you know, depending on when you're putting your embryos in or if you're selling them. So there's a lot of projecting that happens. So, you know, this time of year, producers are going to be looking at their calf crops now, at their replacements. They're going to start planning for those sorts of things. Also planning based on resources, which is something the weather heavily dictates. And we have to keep that in mind too, which is why it comes in handy to have cooperator herds or other recip options, things like that. But yeah, I think starting out that conversation with, you know, what is the goal? People come in with a pretty good idea, a clear picture of what that looks like, and some don't. And most of the time it changes anyway. So, yeah, just starting off with, where do you want this to go? You know, some folks maybe just want to fill up their embryo tank just in case, you know, it's a little bit of an insurance policy on your best cows. If something were to happen to them, you would have those genetics readily available to put back into the herd. Or do you know, hey, I'm more focused on numbers. This is what I want to chase. This is what I need to improve in my herd. How do we do that as quick as possible? Okay, that's a little bit of a different path. Or let's say you, maybe last year we did some conventional flush work, or we didn't use any sex semen or reverse sort technology, and now you have a crop full of bulls and you can't do anything with them. So then we start talking about, okay, let's start looking at some reverse sort or some sex semen options. So, yeah, this is definitely a good time of year, I think, to do that. And that's a pretty big topic of conversation, is what are things looking like? What do I need to do in the next generation or the generation after that? And kind of go from there. There's not a real clear answer, because everybody's going to be different, and most times it's going to change to some degree. But I do think that's a really important conversation to start having now.
Allison, you've talked a lot about planning ahead. Tell me, from your perspective, what are tips, you know, kind of your key tips or things that clients should keep at the forefront of their minds when they're doing some of this planning and, you know, planning for the spring?
Yep. I mean, we are here to help you. Please do not ever hesitate to reach out to anybody in the organization. You know, our job is to be a tool and a resource for you. So don't be afraid to reach out and just say, hey, I don't know where to go next. What do I need to do to start pre-planning? Couple of the probably bigger things to keep in mind this time of year, especially, one, taking stock of the condition that your donors and your recips are in, really keeping track of, you know, how they're cycling, what their body condition is, what your nutrition program is, all those sorts of things. Because really, you know, we're starting to condition those oocytes, you know, not just today for tomorrow's collection. You know, we're doing that work 30, 60, 90 days ahead of time. So making sure that we're up to date on all your health requirements and things like that's important. Next step we'll probably talk about is, you know, the logistics side of it. Let's start lining up. Where are you going to take your donor to do this? Do you need to house? Are you going to haul in? What are we doing for semen? Do we need to start sourcing that, looking at the good collections, things like that? If you are housing her, or, you know, I guess if you're not housing her at a center, if you're keeping her at home, you know, one of the big questions, the hot topic debates has been if you're going to stimulate her or not with FSH. That's something that we have many, many discussions every day and every week about, you know, and it's interesting because we've been doing non-stimulated, no FSH work for so long. Physically, it's the same process, but, you know, we do find that when you use FSH, typically, and I say typically because there's a million variables that go into it, but typically you will see an increase in high quality embryos from the procedure, especially from my experience with sexed or reverse sort semen. So that is something to keep in mind too. Are you going to look at doing that? If so, we'll need to get you set up with stimulation protocol as well. So those are kind of the big things, you know, just wrapping your head around the details, especially on the nutrition and the health side, and starting all those logistical pieces moving so we don't end up in a situation where we're aspirating tomorrow and we don't have any semen yet. So less stress we can put on the whole situation, people and cows, the better. So
one more question that I want to ask, Allison, that you've kind of briefly mentioned here or there, is the donor housing in Maryland. How many donors can you guys house there? And I guess maybe you want to talk a little bit about what that all entails and the care that they get while they're in Maryland.
So we house here, honestly, it kind of fluctuates anywhere between 100 and probably 250 animals here on site. We house predominantly dairy animals, honestly. We do have some limited beef housing as well. We just kind of redid a couple of our runs and our outside shelters and things like that. So it actually works really well. So basically, if you board here or at the other centers, but I can most specifically talk about here, it's a full care scenario. So you pay a daily fee. The donors are kept in contemporary groups. They're fed depending on body condition. I mean, we have some groups that do get some feed and some that don't, depending on what they need. Everybody has, you know, access to free choice minerals, shelters, things like that. We have put a lot of thought, I will say, into the handling facilities. So we try really hard to keep everything as low stress as possible when we're moving them around and giving them shots and things like that. We have some smaller groups or some individual housing for the occasional, you know, really old geriatric type of cows or somebody that's not getting around too good. We sure have those options as well, but most of them will run in, you know, 5 to 10 head kind of groups and be managed along with their contemporaries. So
Allison, tell me what else would you like to talk about the Maryland facility? I mean, is there something you really want to bring attention to that Emily and I haven't asked you about? Maybe not even just the Maryland facility, but yourself, your job. Tell me what you want to talk about.
Oh my gosh. How much time do we have?
Not much. So keep it short.
Okay. So yeah, I don't know. That's a really loaded question. I guess I would probably take my last few moments here to give a huge shout out to, you know, everybody in this organization that keeps the wheels turning every day. It's interesting to kind of see what's going on in the industry and, you know, some of the other companies that are available now and things like that. And I feel so good, and I always have felt so good and so humbled to be part of this specific company, because the people here are talented, they are passionate. They have been doing this for a very long time, and, you know, the resources within our company are just amazing. And I've made incredible friends and, you know, great contacts. And if you're having an issue or if I'm having a problem, you know, there's definitely somebody within this organization that can help fix it. You can definitely feel confident about that, but it's pretty incredible what we do. And I think, you know, a lot of people, it's hard for clients sometimes to really wrap their head around all the pieces that go into making something like this happen. There's many, many layers to what we do, which I just think it's so neat to watch. You know, when I came in almost 5 years ago, I had no idea. Like, I kind of had an idea, but I really had no idea about all the things that go into it and the people that it takes. And I just am always so impressed at what we're able to do. And, you know, the technology, especially with the folks that we have in our research and development department, I mean, the technology is just going to keep getting better and more available. And so I'm excited to be here. I'm always humbled working alongside these people, and I'm excited to see where it goes. So
sometimes I wish we could give people a glimpse, even like our Microsoft Teams chat with the client service team, like how many moving parts there are even within that chat, and how many things you accomplish by saying, hey, who has this or who can help me with this? There's a lot that happens just in that chat, let alone the rest of the company. And then you add on different layers of professional services and shoot side. And, you know, there's just all those different layers. And so sometimes you just kind of wish you could share that snapshot with the world. Like this, there's a lot that goes to this, but I would agree with you, Allison, that there's a lot of great team members that make it happen. And I would consider yourself one of them. So thank you for all of your efforts and everything that you do to keep all those pieces moving.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thanks, Sarah.
I'm not sure that's always how people feel, but thank you.
I'm pretty sure the accounting folks would disagree on the average day, but
I don't care what anybody says, Allison. You're great.
Thanks, Sam.
I meant that about myself, not about you, Allison.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I wanted to clear that up.
Oh, funny.
Oh, gosh.
Well, thank you, Allison, for joining us. This has been great. I think you shared a lot of great information, and if anybody wants to contact you, they can call the Maryland site, or we will be at the Ohio Beef Expo coming up in March to chat with anybody that has questions. So that's exciting. I guess, are you going anywhere before that?
I don't think so. Okay. I think that's the next real live in-person event that's on the calendar. So,
all right. Well, thank you very much. And we'll, talk at you soon.
Yep. Thank you, Allison. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.